You are now listening to Geek vs. Geek with Bug and Geo.
Welcome to episode 11. The episode after 10.
Yeah, man.
Now, I'm just going to dive right in here for the folks listening. This is a special episode. This is one we've been planning for quite some time.
Yeah, I think there's, especially with what's going on right now in the world, I think a lot of people might be interested in that.
And what exactly is this episode about, Gio?
Finance! Personal finance, you know. Now, right off the bat, gotta put a disclaimer out here. Stuff we're going to talk about, we are not financial experts by any stretch of the imagination.
and we are not personally responsible or otherwise responsible for any successes or failures you may have in finance. It is not our fault how you handle your money. We are just providing our own personal knowledge and our own personal experience. If you gain something out of it, that's cool. If not, don't blame us. You had a choice to do whatever you wanted to do. And we are not Charles Schwab Limited by any stretch. This is just knowledge that we've accumulated and we've talked about personally. And we have found that it would probably behoove many of our listeners to join in the discussion and talk about how to manage your personal finances and how to be smart with your money.
At some point we might want to go, do a deeper dive on do your own research, because I think a lot of people don't think about that.
Do your own research doesn't just cover this. That covers everything around you. People ask me, did you see this on the news the other day? No, I don't watch the news. I don't watch television at all. Now I don't even watch Netflix. We talked about that on the last episode. So I'm kind of removed from mainstream media intentionally. And if I don't want to know something, I actually put in the effort to go find it out. Books are a good place to do that. Talking to people in the areas affected by the news, that helps. Having friends around the world to kind of give you personal on-hand knowledge when something happens, that sort of thing.
I'm the exact kind of the exact opposite at the moment. I try to consume and get as much knowledge from as many sources as I can, including news and stuff. I don't like watch ton of it, but enough to see that that the talking heads have lost their minds, and why have they lost their mind?
It has become clear to me that this episode, personal finance, has become very important because a lot of people aren't going to be prepared when the banking system fails. And it's looking more and more like that may happen at some point in the future. I'm not one of these people that, they can... the private Western central banks and blah, 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 blah. Let's talk about your health. I'm not one of those people. I do think something's up. I think COVID hit at a time they didn't shut the economy down because of COVID. There's a bigger reason there. Because what does the economy have to do with disease? Nothing. At any other point in time in history, we would have quarantined the affected people and life would go on as much as possible. forcing healthy people to stay home and not support the economy. There was some intent behind that. Whether it was just about affecting an election, I don't know. But I think it's something bigger and ongoing, which to me seems to lead to a failure of our banking system, which is not government, by the way. The Federal Reserve is a private bank. And it has failed three or four times. The private banking sector has failed three or four times in history. So it's not something unheard of.
So this feeds into a lot more than just, oh, money. It kind of connects to a lot of different things, I notice. Humans are humans.
Well, one of the things we're going to talk about today is real estate. And that's, that'll probably be the first thing we talk about, unless you want to start small and then go big. But which probably be smart to do that. We'll start small and go big, because that's how you have to do it. The first piece of advice I can give is start small, then go big. And we talked about that right before the show, as far as real estate goes. I'm ready to dive into it. This is something I've prepared for quite a while. You have kind of given me credit on knowing a little more about this than yourself. But we both have a lot of knowledge to throw out there. I don't know what makes me more qualified, but I'll take it. I'll run the lead if that's how you want to do it.
Well, you've been looking into this stuff a lot longer than I have, and I have to kind of view this from a very unique lens, if you will.
Well, let me tell you the first piece of advice I don't want to say advice, but the first chunk of knowledge I want to throw out to the people is that I did not take my own advice when I was young. The advice I'm giving you all now, I should have done when I was 20. The first paycheck I got at McDonald's when I was in high school, I should have applied what we're talking about. This starts the sooner you possibly can start. That's the only advantage that any of us have here. If you've got any kind of income, we're on equal playing field. But if there is an advantage, the advantage is time. The more time you put into this, the better the payoff is in the long run. And that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about the long run. We're not talking about getting rich quick. Go get a lottery ticket if that's what you're looking for. What we're talking about is how to play the game, how to be smart at the game. And it is, in fact, a game. And it's a game to win, and we all can win it. That's the beauty of living in America. If I win the game, doesn't mean you lose. You can win it. I can win. We all can win this game if we're smart, and we play our cards right. And that's the first bit of knowledge I want to throw out there. If you're a young person, and one of the few times I'm going to reach out to the young people, don't be the grasshopper, be the ant. Okay. To quote Aesop's fables there. One of my favorite stories from childhood, do not be the grasshopper, be the ant. There's plenty of times to be the grasshopper, but not with your money. That's the first chunk that that's like ground zero. Foundational information right there. If there is an advantage, You know, we're all equal, black, white, male, female. I don't care. You're in America. You've got the opportunity to do exactly what we're telling you about. The system's not rigged against you. Well, it is, but it's rigged against all of us. But it's not. Once you know that it's rigged against us, it's sort of like there is no spoon in the Matrix. Once you realize you're in the Matrix, the rules don't apply. You broke the system. You know what I mean? So that being said, where do you want to go from here?
How did you get started in this, and what, you know, what?
I grew up poor.
As did we all. I mean, well, some of us, you know.
Well, you know, I grew up poor, but I had both parents in my house. Which I think I'm lucky. A lot of my friends grew up in divorced houses, and it didn't go well for them, you know, going back and forth between mom and dad, you know, one parent being more successful than the other and flip-flopping. I grew up in a very stable, old-school, blue-collar house. You know, when I was young, we didn't have a lot of anything. And my parents didn't reach middle class status until we moved here to Alabama. But from 0 to 9 years old, putting mayonnaise on bread as a food was just, you know, if I could throw a tomato on there, I was happy. And, you know, my parents never argued in front of us. They never showed us their struggle. These old school values, you know, and my mom and dad always told us, my mom especially, don't complain. I don't want to hear it. Life's not fair. Get over it. Deal with it. And I, you know, a lot of my friends go, I was like, damn, your mom's kind of cold, man. And it's like, and I thought so too for a long time, but you know, my mom grew up. She had a terrible childhood. You know, she was the oldest, and she lost her father when she was 13, so I never knew my grandfather. There's some family history shit thrown in there that I'm not going to talk about, but, you know, President Kennedy was killed right around the same time her father was killed, and she just thought the world was coming to an end. I mean, you know, and then here her family was split because my grandmother was in this deep depression and just couldn't deal with kids. So here's my mom being thrown all this responsibility. They moved from the country to the city, totally everything crazy. My dad had a good, you know, he had money growing up. My grandfather, my grandparents were successful. But there wasn't a lot of affection in his household, you know, there wasn't a lot of, it was just a different era for my grandparents. They were depression survivors, and it was just, you know, you go out there, you be the most successful you can be, and, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of sympathy, or there wasn't a whole lot of, you know, there was love there, but my grandfather wasn't really affectionate. you know, in fact, I've heard more stories about my dad getting beat than getting hugged. And that's just the truth of the matter. As much as I respect my grandfather for who he was and what he did for the community, the fact that my father never got any affection from him hurts me, because I couldn't imagine me and my dad not being close that way. You know, as much as I make fun of my dad, we're very close. And you know, I will make fun of my dad. I mean, he is who he is. Go ahead.
As do I. I just, you know,
but
go ahead, finish what you're doing, and I'll
Okay. So my, you know, for long story short, we've got time, so I'm not too worried about it. But both of my parents came from very different backgrounds, and those kind of culminated into what I call the struggle. You know, my dad didn't want anything from anybody. He wanted it on his own, the hard way. It's just the way he is. He didn't ask for help from anybody. He didn't, and he married my mom. They married young, and he went straight into the coal mines. And it was a good job, but he was, you know, he came home. He worked 6-7 days a week, 12-18 hour days. He didn't have time to run the house. My mom ran the house. It was just understood. It's like, I'll earn the paycheck, you manage it. You know, and my mom did. My mom was the manager of the corporation that was our house. And she ran a tight ship. You're not wearing Nikes. You're not wearing Reeboks. You're wearing whatever the thrift store has. And, you know, we're not getting Ragu spaghetti sauce. We're getting great value because, you know, there's not enough difference to spend the extra money, you know. And like I said, not until I got older was I introduced to some of these luxuries, you know. So I was able to understand that, hey, you know, having a name brand shirt to wear. My mom made all my clothes when I was growing up. I had really nice clothes, but she made my clothes, all of our clothes. And I remember going to school, everybody asked, oh, where'd you get that sweater? My mom, oh, your mom made that? You know, but now looking back, I really appreciate because, you know, we were dressed really nice because my mom was a seamstress. We didn't look poor when we went to school. We had really nice, one-of-a-kind clothes. And it's very I appreciate that to this day because, you know, had I went to school in rags and gotten made fun of over it, I don't know how I would have handled that. But so basically, to answer your question, I just knew from an early age to appreciate whatever you had. And I've always been a squirreler, you know, squirrel away stuff because, you know, rain might come, you know. So I've always had a savings. I've always put stuff away for a rainy day. But I was ignorant. The internet didn't exist when we were children. Libraries were, you know, hard to get to. And the school library didn't have shit. It didn't have anything worth reading other than fiction. You weren't going to get a book on personal finance in the school library. I mean, and now I know that's by design. But back then, I just didn't know. I mean, you know. So my interest grew in a serious way whenever I met a close friend of mine who dabbles in the stock market. So I started when he and I became friends, I started asking him, or what about this? Or what about that? What about this? And this is what I mean. Start young. When I met this friend, it's probably about 15 years ago now. I should have taken his advice right then and there. Okay. But I didn't. I didn't have a lot of money and I didn't feel like it was worth the risk, you know. But he's the kind of person that, you know, whenever, this is an example I love to share with folks, you know, he's the kind of person that when McDonald's went through their lawsuit for burning that lady, you know, with the hot coffee.
Yeah,
their stock tanked. Well, he was smart enough to buy up a lot of that at the time because he knew it was McDonald's and he knew McDonald's wasn't going anywhere and they'd bounce back eventually. And eventually they did. And, you know, he made a few gains on that. And he's still making gains on that, I would guess. And he also bought AMD when it was like 98 cents a share when it was about to go bankrupt.
That was recently, wasn't it? Like,
It's been a few times over AMD's history, but each time he scooped it up and he'll send me a thing. He goes, remember when I said that AMD was, you know, $1 a share? I was like, look at it now. It's like, God dog, why didn't I buy AMD shares? Which I still may before I run out of money in my savings now. Still, when I get hired on, my last 1,000 in savings, or my last 2, I'm going to invest and start from zero. I know that sounds crazy, but I can explain that later.
Let me just take a second and sort of set myself up, because I think I'm a little unique from you. My dad, like your dad, my parents were working class. My dad worked in the paper mill most of my life, or worked cattle.
Blue collar, man.
Yeah, I mean, we were weren't ever like, you know, you got holes in your clothes and stuff like that. But we were, you know, it was unique because of my situation. I was born premature. I have cerebral palsy, and that presents a unique challenge. My parents have never been, you know, wealthy. They've been in good places, but they've always had, you know, one issue or another. And when you have a child that has, you know, has this kind of issue, it kind of throws your life into a mixing bowl, and you're like, how do you deal with this? And my mom just, like, you know, had to take, you know, took care of me and took care of my sister. My dad was always working, you know, kind of like yours, you know, it's, you know, you go out there and you put the, you know, paycheck, you know, and somebody else has to, you know, deal with it. But you, when you have, you know, external things that you have to deal with, like a child that, you know, needs things like surgeries and you know, special equipment and has to, you know, learn how to walk, and, you know, has, you know, learning disabilities in school. I didn't come to this until I was probably in my early 20s. And I didn't heed it either. Cause, I mean, I never looked at the stock market until I got my first job, and then I kind of only observed it. I didn't. It's like, what? You know, I don't have any money to really invest in this, and I just, we were taught from an early age, you know, I got my financial sense from my mother that, you know, if you want something, you save your money and you go get it. You know, you if it's something you really want bad enough, you'll you know, put money aside, you know, for whatever. And I was just lucky enough to find a job to where, in combination with other things, I was able to eventually put some money away to where I had enough money one day, and I'm like, okay, this money's just sitting here, you know, not doing anything. I mean, you and I have had conversations offline, you know, this money's just sitting here, not doing anything. What do I do with it? You know?
Right.
And I went and started investing, and it's not, you basically have to learn to set goals. You may deviate from those goals because life happens.
Exactly.
To everybody. But as long as you set a goal and you try to achieve that goal, you know, you learn things.
The worst. Okay. What you're saying about goals, man, it's just like spot on. The only thing I can add to that is, the worst thing, the worst case scenario about setting a goal is you overshoot it. I mean, you know what I mean? If you even come close to your goal, that's a success. You know, if you come halfway to your goal, that's a success because you're doing halfway better than you were. You know, worst case scenario about this goal, this principle of setting goals, is you overshoot your goal. There's no negative that can come out of it at all unless you don't attempt it at all. You know.
Yeah, that goes.
That's good advice.
That goes to mentality too. If you, and this, I'm not trying to offend anybody here. I'm just.
No. Everything we're talking about is to try to help you.
Which you know, you can, you know, say whatever you want, but you're the way you look at, you know, we got a lot of people nowadays that are like, well, I don't want to do, you know, this because it's too hard and I, you know, I just, you know, I can do this and I can make X amount of money. You know, if that's your first thought, like, yeah, you need money, but how are you, you're looking at it like, well, I need money. It doesn't matter what kind of a job I do. Yes, it does. you know, I struggle with that on a daily basis because people's attitudes and people's, the way they look at things and how society, you know, views work ethic, is something, and that's how, you know, it's all in how the last generation was raised, this how we were raised. It was all how this current generation was raised. And, you know, their attitude, you're like, I don't, people get tired. People get, COVID kind of really messed with people's heads, like, psychologically, whether you believed it or not. And we're feeling the effects of it now.
I mean, to some extent, yeah.
It's just, I mean, it's like, well, why would I do, you know, something when, you know, it costs too much for me to go do what I need to do? Like, gas prices are a great example of that.
Well, I'm going to jump off of that as a leap pad. Okay. And I'm going to go into how everyone can start building wealth. Okay. For whatever reason you need to build wealth, whether it's for retirement or there's some simple things that will save you. Okay. Now what I did when I really started, I saved up like $20,000 in the span of a year. Okay. And because I was in the market for a house, I made that known to everybody, looking for a house. And I came close to buying one. It got sold out from under me. We've talked about it. And I've been living off that $20,000 ever since I became unemployed. Okay. And I wasn't making that much money. I was making $12.35 an hour, 40 hours a week. Okay. There are several reasons why I could save up $20,000 in a year. Okay. First thing and foremost is don't go and buy a new car ever. A new car is an absolute waste of your financial means. You think you can afford a new car, but you can't. You can't really. And I'm going to break the numbers down. A real life, I work with somebody that at Lowe's, and it was his first real job. He came from Subway to work at Lowe's. And it was the first real money he was making. And I don't even call it real money, but to him it was. Okay. And he gets married real quick, and he has a kid real quick on this job. He thinks he's landed something. Okay. And he's still living with his parents, mind you. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, but just keep in mind what I'm about to tell you. He can't afford to live on his own, but he does this. He goes and buys a brand new car, okay? And bragged about it. Well, I love you. A Kia Soul, okay? Not a bad little car, but don't buy one new. Go to used car lot. Pay cash for one. Save up for a used car and pay cash. I don't care what your excuse is for buying a new car. It's not worth it. Not worth it. Secondhand cars today, Toyotas and Hondas, you're not saving yourself any money. You're not saving yourself anything by buying one of those cars new. They can run forever, literally. So he bought a brand new Kia, $460 a month, okay, on a Lowe's job, all right?
That's a whole paycheck right there by the time you take out taxes.
Well, we got paid every 2 weeks, and that was half a paycheck. So half his paycheck went to this stupid car. And it wasn't big enough for a family. It's a little Kia Soul. It's a little hatchback. So he financed that car over a period of 6 years, okay? All right, do the math. 6 years, $450 a month. That's $35,000 he paid for this car. He will never get even close to that when he sells that car. Never. He'll get a couple thousand for it. So where's the rest of that money? It's gone. You buy the car off the idiot that bought it new, and you save yourself $30,000. Pay $5,000 for the car, pay cash for it. You can save up. If you can pay the $450 a month, take that $450 and put it into savings and save up for a used car, and then walk in with cash. Cash talks. You can get a couple thousand dollars knocked off the top end just by paying for cash.
Yeah, but the not to throw something, but I'm just going to be the devil's advocate here. Okay, used cars have skyrocketed. Is that
how they're still cheaper? They're still cheaper than new. So no matter how you cut it, buying a used car is way better. And they haven't skyrocketed. They've skyrocketed on the lot. Now, if you go to Facebook Marketplace and you're smart and you ask the right questions and they have the right paperwork, you can save yourself a lot of money by buying a car off an individual. They want to get rid of the car. It's cash in their pocket. They're not looking to rip anybody off. It's just, hey, I got this car for sale. Boom. Get the title and you're good to go. Now, you don't have a warranty. That's the number one argument. People, well, I need this warranty. No, you don't. You don't need the warranty. You just need to know a good mechanic.
Yeah, you don't need the warranty on a lot of stuff. Just for a second.
So that's the beginning right there. Now, when I kind of alluded to saving money, you know, taking that $450 and putting that to the side. That's how you accumulate wealth right there. You take as much money left over. See, me, I'm single. It's really easy for me. But if you got a family, okay, pay your bills, feed your family, do what you got to do. But cut out the extra. Don't, you know, learn how to cook. Cook at home. Don't eat out. Take that extra money and put that into savings every month. Just do it automatically. $100. $200. Me, I was throwing $600 a month into my savings account. Okay. Because I don't drive. I don't have a car bill. I don't have fucking gas to buy. I don't have insurance on that car. I could save a lot of money. $600 a month. I didn't see it. It went straight into savings. And whatever extra I had at the end of the month, that went into savings too. But at the bare minimum, $600 went into my savings. Okay. Now, you could do several things. Like, okay, well, you got $20,000 saved up at the end of the year. You can go buy $3,000 or $4,000 out of that. You could buy you a car, and you still have $15,000 or so in your savings. Okay, you see what I mean? You've got wealth right there. You know, you've got that to tap into when you need it. Okay, it's not just for retirement. It's not just for this. If you've got $20,000-$30,000 sitting in your checking or your savings account on tap, you don't have any problems. Okay, your bills are going to get paid. Any catastrophe that comes, you've got it covered. And you'll never have to spend all of that unless, you know, unless something major comes along, you know, like medical expenses. But you, ideally, you'll have medical insurance so that you wouldn't even have to touch it for that. But when it comes right down to it, you know, there's, you know, like helping my parents out. It's like, you know, It's like, you know, my mom and dad are counting pennies trying to figure out how they're going to buy a new stove. Fuck. I got this. Boom. New stove. Don't even worry about it. Did it affect my savings at all? No. But I've got all this money in my savings account, taking a little chunk out of it. A couple weeks time, a month or two, it's replenished. You know, I don't even miss it. It's just like, it's almost free because I don't miss it. You know, yeah, I spent the money, but I don't miss it. I'm not struggling. I'm not living paycheck to paycheck. Okay, so you take that philosophy, okay? I've got this massive amount of money saved up by putting this $600 away or whatever extra that I have away. That's my savings account. The number one thing I do, even to this day, being unemployed, is I have what I call a flood limit on my checking account. Okay. And you're probably thinking, what the fuck is a flood limit? A flood limit is like a water line. Okay. My checking account never goes under $2,000. If it goes under $2,000, I'm drowning. And I need to either pull money out of my savings, or I need to do something drastic. Okay. And the reason is that's a good buffer. I've never got to worry about overdraft. I've never got to worry about anything. If all of a sudden I want to treat my family to a night out at dinner, I don't have to bust out a credit card. I've got it. I know I've got it. I've got at least at any given time $2,000 in my checking account. Automatic. So my day-to-day stuff, I don't have to worry about it. I know I'm not living by the time I get my next paycheck, boom. You know, more money is coming in. You know, so I'm not, I know people, I work with them that are borrowing money for the snack machine 3 days before they get paid. And I'm like, how you live like this? You on your own. How are you getting out of bed every morning and waking you? How do you feed yourself? I don't understand it. You know, where does your money go? I can't figure out how to spend money like they do. Well, they got the new car payment. They're paying rent instead of buying a place. You know, that's something we're going to talk about real estate whenever you're ready. That's just a thing. I always think like I'm poor. You know, I hoard money like a hoarder, you know. I'm a generous person. I'm not like stingy with my money. I mean, you know, whenever you and I hang out, we always fight over who gets the bill on something. Man, you know, It's just always in the back of my mind. I know, like, when I lost my job, I wasn't too worried about it because I've got money in the bank. I could live off of this for quite a long time, and I have. It's going almost a year now. And, well, yeah, almost a year. And I'm not hurting for money. That's not my problem. I mean, yeah, eventually I'll run out, but I had enough savings built up to where I could live comfortably until I found something to replace it.
Yeah, in contrast, well, not contrast, but similar to that, I didn't get a job until very late in life because, you know, like a lot of people, which, you know, it's just hard to get to find employment, especially for, you know, if you have something that prevents you from physically doing labor, or, you know, you struggle doing labor, which the labor job is what really is where you get the money nowadays. You know, if you work at a factory or you, you know, something of that nature, you have some sort of skill as a white collar worker. I have tried most of my adult life to, you know, move up, but it's a struggle. And a lot of people have to, you know, have to think in that, just like you. And we both kind of, you know, it's like, okay, I got a job. My first job was working for some guy out of a shady looking house. I was living in Alabama at the time, or business that was just renting space. And basically my job was to sit there and make phone calls and try to sell credit card machines, which are expensive. And let me tell you, a lot of businesses don't want them because they lose money. For all the money that they make, they have to turn around and, you know, pay, you know, exorbitant fees to the credit card companies for the privilege of having the machine. It's convenient nowadays for them to have this because most people have plastic or whatever, but and don't really use cash. But needless to say, that job didn't last very long because you didn't really make any money at it. But from an early age, like I said, I learned how to save my money for what I wanted. If I wanted, it was material good, and unless there was something that I, you know, really needed to have as I got older, I didn't work, for like, once I lost that, or was basically let go from that job because there was no future in it, that I wasn't making any money, I went to work in retail, Kmart, which is no longer around anymore, except for a very small maybe a few stores, and I was a greeter, made a little bit of money. Well, from a very early point, I said, okay, I'm going to take the money because I get, you know, I have a different source of income. So I can take that money and I can save it. Every paycheck, I just save it. And I still do that. And then I didn't work for like 10 years. And I was in my early 20s when this happened. So it was like, okay, you're sitting there trying to figure, you're bored, you don't have anything to do, you know, and I didn't know enough to kind of improve my skills, which I think a lot of people should do when you have downtime. You know, if you're not working, you know, if something happens to you, you should be, you know, trying to build yourself back up so that when you go back into the market, into the workforce, then you have something to present to people that's attractive to them, which will ultimately get you more money. It's easy to say and harder to do, because I'm still struggling to do this. But for those of you who, you know, learn from our experiences, that's a lot of people don't, you know, take into account wisdom and knowledge like they used to. They just kind of sit back and go, well, I guess such and such will do it or whatever. No, they won't. You know. And like I said, I struggle with this on a daily basis almost. You kind of have to get over that mentality of somebody's going to, you know, help me out.
Nobody. Not necessarily. It's no, they're not ever. It's not. Well, they're not necessarily. No, no, they're not going to help you. Life is not fair. Goes back to what I was taught from a very young age. I don't bother asking people for help because I don't expect it. And have I struggled? Yeah, I'm struggling right now, but you wouldn't know it. I mean, you know, this idea of even a glimmer of the world's going to help me out, the government's going to help me out. No. The one thing I want people to get from this episode is to get off your ass and work for it. That's the only way you're going to achieve anything. You have to take the initiative. It ain't coming to your door. You're not going to find it in the back of a magazine, just miraculously show up. No, you have to say, this is what I want. And you have to take the risk and you have to figure out how to do it. Nobody. Not the government, not me, not Gio, not my parents, not his parents, not even your own parents can help you.
And for those of you that if for some reason you end up having to get assistance, let me, because I've had to impart this knowledge to people on very various times in my life, and they're shocked by this. If you ever become disabled, or you have some sort of issue where you can't work, or you know, you have hard, there's some situation that comes up. Now, understand that I'm in a unique position because of my disability. I've had this my entire life. Not saying it's good, not saying it's bad. It's just how it is. If you're in this situation and you get to the point, to the age we are, at some point you're going to realize, like, okay, you know, what do I do now? Well, don't totally rely on, you know, what you get from the government. Will help you out to an extent, but don't expect it to always be there. In fact, my rule of thumb is to act like it's not there. I mean, it's a good fallback position if something happens. But if something happens to you and you get hurt and, you know, you end up laid up, they're not going to give you very much. So you have to pad yourself against that, because you never know what can happen. You know, and it helps, you know, like what you're talking about with a house or with any other thing. But it takes time. That's the other thing that people don't is, you know, time, this takes time. You can't just wake up one day and be like, oh, I've got, you know, it's going to be a while. You got to be patient. But the basic idea is whatever's there, if it's assistance from the government, don't act like it's not there, because basically it's not.
Well, the the time thing goes back to start this sooner rather than later. Any plan you have, start it yesterday. Start it now. Don't wait, because time is of the essence. It's never too late, really. I mean, you know, I guess it is. But had I known now what I knew when I was 20, I'd be retired right now. I really would. And if I applied what I known, I might even be wealthy. So there was a lot of circumstances in my life. I decided to run my own business for the first half of my youth or my adulthood. And that's another misnomer. Because you own your own business doesn't mean you've got money. You're even more poor than somebody out there. You know, it's more of a struggle than anything, because there's nothing the government hates more than a small business, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, I had two employees working under me. They were part-time, so, you know, it's not like I was helping them provide for their family or whatever. You know, they were just helping me out more than anything. I did that for a long time. But I made not a lot of money. It was paycheck to paycheck. It was most of my money went back into the business trying to keep it afloat. And I could have done that indefinitely until I just got sick of it. You know, at some point I was just like, you know, I don't want to deal with all of this. I want somebody else to deal with it. And that's when I went to Lowe's. And I was making more money at Lowe's than I was running my own business, believe it or not. And at the end of the day, it looks like a lot of money, but you pay the government, you pay taxes on your income. You're really paying taxes twice. You're paying taxes on your business, and then you're paying taxes on your income, and then you're paying sales tax on top of that, and then God forbid you show a profit. You know, so there's that whole thing. I will throw in this from a business standpoint. I do defend the business more than I do the employee a lot of the time. And, you know, you hear people talk about, you know, oh, they pay their CEOs these bonuses every year when they could be. There's a reason for that. Yeah, they could pay their, a lot of companies like Mercedes, for example, they don't pay their CEO the bonuses. They throw out Christmas bonuses every year. And a lot of businesses do throw out Christmas bonuses every year. And that's just them shedding profit. That's all that is. Yeah, they're being generous with it. They could throw it to their CEOs, and a lot of them do. But anytime you get extra money from your employee, they're shedding profit. The reason they shed profit is because they're going to get taxed through the yin-yang, probably out of business. And they don't do some kind of tax code trickery, they will be taxed out of business. And that's bottom line. So either
you have, if you work for retail, in the retail industry right now, during all these years of COVID, everybody was doing great. So at Christmas, you know, everybody got a bonus because the profits were up. Money's got to go somewhere. So why not, you know? But I just wanted to throw that in there. Sorry.
Oh, that's all right. So, you know, when I hear about businesses paying their CEOs those ungodly amounts of numbers, yeah, it bothers me, but I get it. Now, if I was those businesses like Mercedes, I would distribute it amongst my employees. That's the smart thing to do. Anytime you can make your employees happy, the better. Yeah, and
which is what happened. What happened to my situation? The only part about it is you got to remember that bonus is taxed.
Well, dude, any income you get is technically taxed. Even if it's under the table, you're supposed to say, yeah, I got this amount of money.
Yeah, but for the benefit of our audience is what I'm basically saying. I
know. Well, for the benefit of our audience, they just need to know that any income that you get is supposed to be taxed. And I think living in America, we all know this.
I mean, taxes get more and more absorbent every year. That's just, you know, as the saying says, there's only two things in life for certain: death and taxes. Which sounds kind of morbid, but
yeah. So yeah, owning your own business is a good view.
Yeah.
So owning your own business is a good insight to how the other perspective. It's like, you know, the whole this show is not a political show, but you know. The only reason I understand conservatism and liberalism is because I've been on both sides. I finally kind of landed on a side, but I've been in both camps at various points in my life, and I understand both ideologies. You know, well, same. You won't understand your employer fully unless you become an employer yourself at some point. And having good business sense, think of it this way. First of all, having good business sense is helping you manage yourself as a corporation. Okay. Think of yourself as a business. Run your personal finances like you're running a business. And if you're running your personal finances and you said, what if this was a business? Would this business be successful? And the answer to that question is no. Then you need to change how you're running your finances, because you are your own company. You work for yourself, essentially. Whatever you do to gain income, that's the name of the game. Just like a corporation's primary function is to profit. Well, that's your goal too, financially. It's you're preparing. You would like to profit. So if you're 3 days away from your paycheck and you're asking a coworker who's making the same money you are, hey man, let me get a quarter for this machine real quick. If you're in that situation, your business is failing. You're about to go bankrupt.
Yeah.
And so, you need to change how you're running yourself.
Okay. All right. So we got the mentality out of the way. We got that stuff out of the way. So you're an average, you're to the point where you want to put some roots down. So how do you think you wanted, like you said, you wanted to buy a house.
Okay. How do I get to the point where I was approved for a mortgage? Starting from zero?
Investing in that kind of thing, yeah.
Okay. Well, first of all, your first house shouldn't be a rental property. Your first house should be your house. You know, that's your castle, that's your domain, that's yours. And that's the American dream. Just own your own house. You know. So that should be your first goal. Now, when I set a goal, when I finally decide, I've been through failed relationships and I've been through everything, and I finally landed back in my parents' house, I said to myself, I can stay here and I can live comfortably, spend time with my parents in their golden years, and it's noble, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I'm not judging anybody who does that. But me, I looked at it as, well, you know, this is good, but I want more. I think my parents want more for me, and I need to think big. I need to think bigger, and I'm going to go through the whole process. Okay, you alluded to save up. You were taught the same thing I was taught. If you want something, save up for it. Go pay cash for it. Get it all out of the way at once. I grew up on that same mentality. I didn't own a credit card until I was 44 years old. 40. Until my early 40s, I did not own a credit card. And this house buying process was the only reason I even have a credit card.
Yeah, late 20s, early 30s for me. And it happened by pure fluke. But, yeah.
So, the process is, first of all, zero credit is not worse than bad credit. But, because fixing bad credit is extremely difficult. It's just, you have to pay. that's the only way. That's the only way you fix bad credit. You pay for it, literally. But I had no credit because I never bought anything that I couldn't afford. You know. So one day I decided to go into my bank and talk to the branch manager, head honcho of my particular branch, and I asked him one question. I said, I want to buy a house in the near future. And eventually I want to buy rental properties as investment. But right now, I want to buy my own house. I know I'm not prepared to do that now. But what advice do you have for me to get me to that end goal? How do I get there? And he perked up and he was like, wow, that's a really great question. Nobody comes in here and asks that, you know, because I wish more people would, you know. And I said, okay, so you're willing to help. And he goes, oh, yeah. He goes, anytime we can help you with your personal finance, we win, you know, because if you overspend in your checking account or you're bad with your money, you eventually have to close your account and we lose the customer. So anytime we can help you be successful financially, we're investing in our own business as a bank because we know you'll bank with us. We know that you're not going anywhere. You're not going to go from bank to bank or live off a money card like a lot of people do. You know, I don't know how you do that, but anyway. So he laid out an outline for me. And the first thing he did was he told me about a program that my bank offers. And he said a lot of banks offer this, but he said this is something Regions is very proud of. And it's called a secure deposit loan. It's the first step in building your credit from zero. And it's excellent because I mean, it's just excellent. It's basically free money almost. But a secure deposit loan, okay? What you do is you save up a little bit of money, like $1,000. In my case, it was $2,000 because there was a guitar I wanted to buy. I had the money for it, which I'll get into, but I wanted it to help my credit. So it was like two birds with one stone. It was the first thing I bought on finance, okay? So he said the way a secure deposit loan works is you take a chunk of money, $500, $1,000, however much. And what Regions does is takes that money and puts it away in a separate account, okay, and locks it. You can't touch it. They can't touch it, okay? And then they give you the amount that you have. Okay, in my case, it was $2,000. I took a secure deposit, so they took my $2,000 I saved up, and they locked it in a separate account where I couldn't touch it and they couldn't touch it. And then they gave me $2,000 into my checking account, or they asked me what account I wanted to do. I chose my checking account, and that money I could use for whatever I want to. Okay, and then I paid $100 a month until I paid it off. Now, I paid it off early. I paid on it a year, and then I paid it off. Okay, so I, you know, and the interest rate is like 5%. So I paid $12 on that $2,000, something crazy like that, 15, something like that. I had to do the math, but it was $98 a month, and it was for 2 years. But like I said, I paid on it for a year, boosted my credit, and then I paid the rest off. Okay, that was the first step in establishing good credit. Okay. You can do that as many times as you want, as long as you pay it off. And what happens when you pay that loan off? Okay, I paid this loan off. They unlock the money, the collateral money that you originally, they unlock that and give it back to you. So you got your $2,000 back. You already spent $2,000. So basically, it only costs you whatever the interest is. You eventually get your money back because it's your money. So that was the way I started my credit. And then there's a few things I had to do, and I had to wait because, you know, the account wasn't that old and this, that, and the other thing. So a lot of little things. Those secure deposit loans, like I said, you can do as many of those as you want. Pay it off, okay? Don't neglect those. Because once your bank gets on your bad side, that's it. They're not going to help you. So take a loan out from your bank if at all possible. Don't go to these cash places or whatever. Go to your bank. Talk to your bank. Your bank wants to help you. Okay, especially my bank. My bank treats, they roll out the red carpet for me. Because I'm good to them and they're good to me. We have an understanding. And I have a and Regions is a conservative bank. They don't take financial risks. They don't do no crazy mortgages or anything like that. They're old school Southern bank. And that's what I love about them. A lot of people don't like them because they just won't hand money out. And it's not their job to hand money out. You have to, you know, you have to work with the bank, meet them halfway, you know. It's your money and their money, technically. You're sharing money at the end of the day. We'll get into that some other time. But so this is all established your credit. You need a credit score of at least 700, okay? My loan officer told me I would have been approved at 688. But that's me. That's not everybody. She said, normally we don't look at anybody under 700. Okay. So if you don't have a credit score of 700 or better, you got to fix it. And like I said, whatever you need to do to fix it, you got to fix it. Throw money at the problem. Get that credit score up there. Okay. That's the first thing she asked me when I went in there. Not how much do you make? Nothing. What's your credit like? And when I told them, oh, then they gave me a plethora of options. I mean, the doors just open because I had like 800 something credit. So it was like, well, here, you could do this, you could do that, you could do here, you, we could do this for you. Here's this and blah blah blah. I mean, it was just like, goddamn. I feel like you ever seen that skit with Eddie Murphy when he was on Saturday Night Live when he poses a white person undercover and he had all this white privilege thrown at him?
It doesn't ring a bell, but
yeah, that's what I felt like. I felt like that I felt like I was in on something that I wasn't supposed to be in on, man. You know. And so that's when you know, they said, well, how much do you have for your down payment? And I told them, they're like, damn, you know, because the whole time I was building that credit, I was saving money. See, two birds, one stone. Anytime you can do that, do it. Because I knew I couldn't get it right now, the loan, you know, the mortgage. So in the meantime, I'm going to save up money because your down payment, unless you have 20% right off the top, don't even think about it. So whatever house you're looking at, whatever that price is, you can negotiate the top end a little bit. There's a little bit of wiggle room on the top end. But if the house is $120,000, You're going to need about $20,000-$25,000, you know. So while I was building the credit and the secure deposit loan and the credit card and everything, I was saving that money, just saving that money, putting everything I had away, squirreling it away, because I knew the bigger the down payment, the easier it was. They knew it does several things. The bigger the down payment you have and you come into the bank with that, they know you're committed. Well, this dude's responsible enough. Look how much money he saved. So he's more than likely going to, you know, he's invested in this. He's not borrowing. Everybody's telling me, Scott, you could get a zero down loan. I don't want a zero down loan. I don't want these first time loan deals. I want a legit mortgage. That way I'm protected. And once they know you're serious, like, hey, you know, this dude's invested, we're going to get behind him on this, or her, whoever. I'm not, you know, anybody can do this. Anybody. Bank cares about one thing. If we throw $150,000 at you, are you going to pay us back? That's all. They don't care about the color of your skin. They don't care about your economic background. They don't give nothing about nothing. Trust. That's what they care about. Your credit score shows trust. Okay. It's not some elite club that somebody belongs to. When you have good credit, you're telling the bank or the loanier, hey, this person's trustworthy. Okay. And the down payment shows proof is in the pudding. It's like, hey, I've got the money. I'm putting the money where my mouth is. This isn't just talk. Okay, I was able to save up this down payment, and also it brings the total mortgage, monthly mortgage, down a considerable amount. The more you throw down on the payment, or on, you know, the more you throw down on the mortgage, the less you're like I was approved for $150,000. Okay, on my mortgage, and my payment was going to be like $526 a month, which I could have done at Lowe's easy. Okay, and I was looking at 3-bedroom, 2-bath house, about 1,600 square foot, $150,000. I mean, anybody can do this, man. Anybody can do this. Okay, my problem is I lost my job. Okay, that's the only thing. But jobs are out there. So I had the down payment, $20,000 I was going to put down, almost 20%. Got approved for the mortgage. And I'd found a house. But, you know, before I could get all this together, it sold. And, you know, I'm very particular on what kind of house I was looking for. So, you know, by the time I found another house, or I still haven't found one. I'm still looking, but I haven't found one, you know, that I've been keen on since. I know without a job, I'm not gonna be able to get a house anyway. I'm almost, that down payment I had saved up, I'm almost out of. So, success and failure all at once, but not failure, because having lost my job, I had money to live on. You know, I had bill money, I had food money if I needed it. You know, I'm not really feeling the effects of losing my job. I want my job back because, you know, ultimately I do want to get a house. Okay, so once you own your house, okay, you went through all this process, okay, the bank wants to loan you money. Okay. It's just, you there's certain rules you got to follow. Like I said, it's about trust. It's their money they're giving you, not yours. I mean, they're giving you money and they expect it back over a 30-year period. So it's not like, I mean, it's not like an instant win for them. It's a huge risk, because as soon as you lose your job and you don't pay that mortgage anymore, they got to eat that. Yeah, your credit's fucked, but, you know, they got to eat that loan they gave you. So it's not, it's a huge risk for the bank. It's not like they're all bad guys making, you know, and they want to make sure that the man, you know, they're the man bringing you down. If I had 150, think of it this way. If you had $150,000 and one of your friends who's notoriously bad about borrowing money comes up to you and says, you know, I'm going to buy this house, man. Can I borrow $150,000? Would you loan it to him?
Not unless you trust him. Nope.
Right. The trust is the thing. You have to establish the trust. And the down payment helps you because that brings the mortgage, you know, the monthly payment down. And also, to, what it really does is it tells the bank that you're committed to this. You're responsible enough to save up the money in the first place, and you're determined enough to do it. So that shows trust. Your credit score shows you're responsible and trustworthy. And that's really the main thing they look at. And they want to know how much they wonder how much income you make a month, because they want to make sure you can afford what you're asking for. Because again, you know, they're the ones putting up the money for your house. Yeah, you own your house, but who paid for it? You're paying them back, but still, who gave you the money? You know, it fell out of the, you know, it fell out of the clear blue sky for you. So there's certain things you have to do in return. You know, that's the way I look at this. And once you understand that mentality, once you understand how the bank thinks, then you can play their game. It's that simple. Investment properties aren't really that different. They're more reluctant, and this is the reason I said you buy your house first. It's one of the many reasons. But banks are reluctant to loan money on investment properties as for first-time buyers. Because you're not living in that house, you're more you care about it less. And if you care about it less, you're more likely to let it go when other things fall through. So there's, you know, it's harder to get a loan for investment property unless you're already paying a mortgage with that bank on an existing property, or you've already paid a mortgage off with them. You know, so that's another thing. It's just stepping stones. Everything, you're leveling up along the way here. That's what, going back to what we said in the beginning. You start off young. The younger you start off, and the more time you have to level up. Because in my case, it took 5 years to establish credit, you know, to where I needed it to be, essentially. You know, from zero to paying off the loan, to getting a credit card, using it regularly enough to have good credit, and then applying for the mortgage and all that. And you'll get an approval letter that you present to your realtor. You know, it's like, hey, my bank approves me for this. You know, and your realtor's like, okay, I know what to work with. And you're good to go. Okay. Investment properties, you know, there's two ways to look at that. Me, I prefer the rentals. I want to own the house as long as I'm alive. I don't want to sell the house. I want it to be a potential income, you know, residual income, you know. And generally speaking, a lot of people don't like to rent because it's a hassle. Everybody and their brother talks me out of, tries to talk me. You don't want a rental property. If you want to get in real estate, just buy a house, fix it up, and flip it. That's fine, but I like the idea of having residual income. Like, if I lose my job, I've got the rental income coming in, and, you know, I have constant money coming in every month. You know, I like that. That's comfortable to me. Dealing with the tenants and everything, that you're going to deal with shit no matter what. I mean, you know, I don't really see a difference.
That's what a lot of people don't want to deal with. And I understand. I mean, my parents rented a home, when I was a kid. It was a trailer. And basically the people we had in there tore the place up, and you're responsible for the house. So they just tear the place up, and it's like, well, I don't have to fix it. Same thing happens now. Like, you get people in there, and they just bark their dogs, tear something up, or they tear.
Well, there's ways to mitigate that. And you just, you know, it's all how you structure your lease, man. You know? But and I take the good with the bad. You know, I like to think if I get a good renter in there, long term renter, that they'll take care of their house, and because they're living in it. So, you know, it is what it is. It's good and bad with everything. But rental, owning real estate, in my opinion, is the key to wealth, personal wealth. And what I mean by personal wealth, are you going to be able, you know, buy a private plane and travel the world? Maybe not. But you'll never have to worry about where your food's coming from. You'll never have to worry about where you lay your head. And that, to me, is success. You know, just not having to worry about anything. That's success to me. And there's a lot of ways you can go about it. But like I said, start right now. I'm going to challenge our listeners to start right now and take whatever they can afford. Make some sacrifices. And if they don't already have one, go to their bank. I prefer a credit union. If you're one of these people living off a card, a money card, go to a credit union. Open up an account. Credit unions are better than banks. I use a bank because I have a really super relationship with my bank. And if I didn't have that, I'm probably still going to open up a savings. I'm probably going to move my savings account to a credit union, to be perfectly honest about it. And credit unions are better than banks. Well, that's the same thing. No, they're not. Credit unions are owned by the people that use them. And the yield, the interest yields, we could talk about CDs. We could talk about, you know, we could talk about a lot of things, you know.
I was told a couple of years ago that the interest on the CD isn't what it used to be. But
if you go to a credit union, it's going to be better. You can get short-term CDs that mature in like 6 months or a year. That's how a good friend of mine I used to work with, he clued me in on that. This guy, I love him. He's like family to me. I'm not going to say his name. I'm not going to out him. But he's street as they come. I mean, in fact, I grew up kind of street because of the school I went to. So he and I know some of the same areas of town, and we know some of the same people. So it's like people that know me are like when he met me and he realized that I knew some of the same people he did, he's like, damn, I would have never guessed you'd be street, man. So yeah, there's a lot of things about me folks don't know, man. But he was, you know, he's a former drug dealer, and he's got friends in prison and shit. And, you know, like when I say street, he's like straight up street. But one thing about him is he took all that money, okay, and he invested it into the stock market, and he invested it into CDs and stuff. And he flipped around. He, instead of selling drugs, he's now flipping CDs. And he's working two jobs only because he doesn't like having idle time. He's one of these people that's always hustling, and I respect that. He's always got a hustle going. And he told me one of the famous quotes of my life. He said, everybody, you know, he goes, everybody, how did he say this? He goes, I want to take what I learned on Martin Luther King Boulevard and move it to Wall Street. And I was like, damn, that's a profound thought right there. In other words, he wants to take his street wisdom and apply it to Wall Street. And he's done it. And he's doing better than I am right now, speaking truth. So he and I share a lot of financial advice when we talk to each other. It's like on that level. And like I said, he's a really good friend of mine, and we look out for each other. His mom's sweet as hell, and I consider him family. Really do. And there's only a few people outside of my real family that I consider family, and He is definitely one of them. We hit it off pretty quick. In fact, I talked the night I quit Lowe's. I had a long talk with him at the Millworks desk, and I was and he was just like, you know, I decided that I was just gonna quit, and he was instrumental in helping me through that, you know, that process. And everything went to hell after I left, so I know it was a good decision. But personal finance, if you're a drug dealer out there, I don't encourage you to sell drugs. But if you're a drug dealer, don't reinvest in your business. Take that money and legitimize it. You'll be better. Do what Easy E did, okay? Because I'm being for real, because there's a lot of people.
I know, but I'm just laughing because it's just like.
There's a lot of people out there that sell drugs for the same reason you and I are talking right now. You know, they're living paycheck to paycheck, and take that money you're making and reinvest it. Okay, put it into savings a little bit at a time. Don't be too obvious about it. Just put it in there a little bit at a time, and build your savings up, and then get out of that game. Start a new game on Wall Street. Because it's just as fun and exciting. It's not against the law. And you're sticking it to all those people that don't want you to succeed. That's the thing. You know, there's a lot of people in the super wealthy 1%, we'll call them, that don't want us plebs to know what we're talking about right now. But because we live in the information age and you're able to listen to this podcast right now because of it, they can't hold those secrets anymore. It's fair game to all of us. And like I said, it doesn't matter if you're black, white, Hispanic. Get to this country from another one the right way, and it's game on. Now, if you come in illegally, you're starting off breaking the law. Okay, so you lose me right there. You disrespect the United States when you come in here thinking you're above the rules. The rest of us have to follow the rules. You should too. But once you do, you're part of the club, and we welcome you. And you're no different to any one of these benefits or one of these advantages that we're talking about. There's no exemptions. As long as you know the rules and you know how banks think, and you know how the financial system works, it's fair game to everybody. And there's no reason. It's like, you know, when I started investing in the stock market, you know, I just took money that I wouldn't miss. And right now it's doing bad. So I'm not selling anything right now. Now's the time to buy stuff. Okay. And we can do a whole nother episode on that. But I just want to cover personal finance. Mainly outside of the stock market right now, just on how you on the everyday can manage your wealth or your finances. And like I said, if you were a business, you know, George Morris Incorporated or Scott Toothman Incorporated, would you be a successful business? And if the answer to that is no, like, are you making a profit? And the answer to that is no, you need to rethink some things. Listen to what we're saying here in this episode. And if you're doing better than we are, or if you have more to add to this conversation, we might do an interview show if you reach out and talk to us.
Towards the end of the show, I will.
But keep... we are at towards the end of the show. So
okay. I think we might have to split this up into.
We can do that, because the more I'm talking, the more things are coming to mind, and this is a lifetime of accumulation. So 2 hours is good, but there's definitely more territory to cover here.
Okay,
like the stock market, you know.
Yeah. Next time, I think we want to. That's a good stopping point. Next time, I think we can start with the secondary, you know, other streams of income, I think.
Okay.
Okay. Because there's definitely some more stuff that I want to kind of look into and pick your brain about, that I want to impart to everybody else.
Oh, okay. just to give everybody a heads up, we don't mention people like it's normally it's a conversation between us, just us two. And for the most part, that's how it's going to be. But for the purposes of this episode, it didn't really make a lot of sense just to not, you know, include like there's somebody else in the room. So that's why the conversation is a little bit different. Now, that being said, we do have a Facebook page that you can communicate with us. We don't have an email address as of yet to communicate directly. I'm working on that. I'm working on stuff that's outside of...
I didn't even cover inflation and assets.
No.
Damn. Yeah, this is definitely going to have to be a part two.
Yeah, we're definitely going to have to... but there is a way to get a hold of us. We will, we're working on, because as you know, if you've looked at our Facebook page, there's a lot of, we're trying to make this better. We're trying to get better at what we're doing. And so it's more enjoyable for us and it's more enjoyable for you. Just hit the bug up. If you want to contribute to us and give us information or advice, it doesn't or money for that matter. It doesn't have to be money, but if you feel you want to,
it would help us. We're reaching a point right now where if we had some sort of income from the show, it would help us improve the show and continue it. Hello.
Yeah, I'm here.
So, I just want to say that we're reaching a pivotal point here in the early stages of the show where, if we started getting donations, it would help us improve things tremendously. Cause we're finding our limitations and, any help, any kind of value you can add to the show would definitely help. Contributing knowledge, resources, monetary. I don't want to sit here and beg for money.
It's called value for value. If you get something out of this, you know, just put into it whatever you feel is worth to you. We learned this from. I want to give them a shout out. You know, there's a podcast called No Agenda that we both listen to pretty extensively. We believe in what these guys are doing. They're kind of one of the early people to start doing this. Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak. Everybody knows Adam Curry from MTV.
Who actually invented podcasting? I might want to give him credit for that.
Yes. We don't mention them often, and we're not going to because this is our show, you know. But, every once in a while, it would be nice to kind of acknowledge our forefathers and who set us on this path. In the morning, some people know what that is. Some people don't. Just check out No Agenda. That's all I'm going to say about that. If you get something out of this, please, consider contributing to it, whether it be knowledge or financially, we'll have clearer instructions on how to do these kind of things as we go along. I know we're like 11 episodes in, but we're just getting started, and we want to make this better. So help us out.
Well, all right. Look forward to part two. That'll probably be the next episode. We're going to talk a little bit more in depth about the stock market. We'll try to help you understand what inflation is. It's a word you hear on the news all the time. And we'll talk about how to adjust or defeat inflation. And that pretty much covers it for this particular episode. As far as, you know, we can go on for another 2 hours, but like I said, I think it's best to split it up into two, maybe even three parts, just depending on how the next episode goes.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, how popular this one is. That's always a deciding factor on how we approach something. Not really all the time, but on episodes like this, it does help, because if we don't feel like we're benefiting anybody, then, you know, if we're just doing a regular episode, fine, you know, because there's no specific purpose there, and we're just doing what we do, and that's why we do this. But when we decided to do these special episodes, it's usually because we feel we want to contribute something specific to an audience. And if there's no audience to contribute to, then we'll do less of these special episodes and we'll just move forward with what we normally do, I think. Mm-hmm. And so feedback on these special episodes are particularly important. Any other episode is important as well, but we don't really pay as much attention on the regular episodes, because like I said, we just do what we do. But these episodes, these aren't for us. We already know what we're talking about, and we already apply what we're talking about. So this is for an audience specifically. And I know that's kind of crazy, because like, this is every episode for an audience. Yes and no. And we've discussed this at length. You know, what is this show? Primarily, it's for us. It's just us having a conversation, and you get to listen in on that. So if there's one listener, fine. If there's no listeners, fine. But these episodes, like the Hebagon episode and this episode, we want to impart knowledge. We want to impart wisdom onto an audience. There's people that need to hear this. And so having the feedback and knowing that we've reached any audience is helpful, because that's what these episodes are for. And we're not necessarily going to tell you which one of the, you know, what episode is what, you know, you get from it what you get from it. But this is obviously one of those episodes, you know, where, and usually somewhere in the show or in the title somewhere, we'll tell you that, hey, this is a special episode. You know, if you don't pay attention before, you might want to pay attention now and to get something out of it, because, my thinking is, like a last episode, I kind of felt like a curmudgeon. Yeah, young people. Eh. And most of the time I kind of feel that way. But this is different. I want young people especially to hear what we're saying. We're the future speaking to the past. Or the past speaking to the future. More accurate.
I was like, that's kind of reverse that. Yeah.
So if young people can listen to what we're saying and apply this knowledge, it doesn't benefit us at all. We already know. It helps you.
Well, I mean, it also, I kind of want to say, I was trying to impart this earlier, but if I didn't make it clear, I'm just going to say, you know, never stop learning. This is what this is for. You know, we're just one part of it. You know, we're putting this information down, and you either get something out of it or you don't. It's up to you.
And it's also up to you to go beyond what we're saying and learn on, you know, don't just take what you heard on Geek versus Geek and go out there and jump in the deep into the pool. Yeah, you can do that, and there's nothing wrong with that, but don't hold us responsible. But, you know, go read the Wall Street Journal. Go read Yahoo Finance, which Wall Street Journal is not a financial publication anymore. So disregard that. But it was when we were coming up.
Still useful. It's useful knowledge if you know what you're looking for, but still.
Look at Yahoo Finance or Google. I don't like Google, but Google Finance is equivalent. And study how businesses are doing. You know, businesses that you've never heard of and don't know what they do, research them. Say, what does this business do? Like, one of the companies I invested in is I forget the name of it, but it's basically it's a chemical company. You're like, Scott, why are you investing in a chemical company? Well, they make a product that makes fiber optics more clear, to where the light travels through the fiber better. And since fiber optics is a growing business, this business will grow as well. But not a lot of people think of that. So, you know, this lab is kind of, you know, in the tech industry, but it's not like Google. So their stocks are still attainable, and they'll grow eventually as, you know, fiber optics become more and more commonplace. Mm-hmm. So that's those things like that to think about.
Well, that's a good something to pick up on next time too, because I'm already thinking of more questions that we can talk about.
well, all right then. I'll just leave that as a teaser for episode two then, and unless you've got anything, I'll call this a success.
Yep, I'm good. Until next time, I'm Gio.
And I'm Bug.
Later.